Okay, we will be starting. So I will. Katja is here. So hello to online participants. I will stop the video feed now. So hi,
Hello.
Janine.
Good morning.
We will only keep the mic online. So. The recording is on. Everything seems to be working. Does this work? Yes. Okay. Good morning, everyone. So today we will be having Katja Pulkkinen, who is giving the first talk, and then Sami Taipale after her. So two talks today, and let's start with Katja. So go ahead, please.
Okay, thank you, Siiri, and thank you for this opportunity to tell about my or our research on microalgae. So I'm a lecturer at the Department of Biological and Environmental Science, and we have been recently working with culturing microalgae in aquaculture wastewater in order to capture nutrients and carbon dioxide from the system into the algal biomass. And as I realize that you are not all biologists, so I will first tell you what are microalgae, and then what they can be used for, and then about their culturing and global markets. And then I will tell you more about my or our own research at the Department of Biology. So microalgae are unicellular organisms that are capable of photosynthesis. So they are like plants. So they photosynthesize carbon dioxide and water with they use energy from the like sunlight or light, and then they make sugars, and then they release oxygen in the process. And microalgae are phylogenetically very diverse group. They're mostly eukaryotic, but for example, blue-green algae are bacteria, so they are also called cyanobacteria. And this phytoplankton, microalgae are called phytoplankton when they occur in natural environment, and they can be found in all aquatic environments, in lakes, ponds, rivers, and the sea. And in aquatic food webs, they act as a primary producers. So they are producing the biomass into the ecosystem. So they are making the thin air into the sugars that are then used by other consumers in the food webs. And for example, the importance for us humans is that the polyunsaturated fatty acids that are these omega-3 and 6 fatty acids that are good for our health that we get from the fish, they are actually first made by these microalgae and phytoplankton, and then they are transported in the food webs into the fish. And so what can we do with the microalgae? What are they good for? So they are good for almost anything. So everything that can be made from fossil fuels can be made from microalgae. But in addition, they produce several different compounds that are good for human and animal nutrition. They produce, for example, pigments. So they use these pigments for catching the sunlight and for photosynthesis and protecting themselves. So they are chlorophylls, carotenoids, and these can be used in various applications like cosmetics or human nutrition, functional feeds, and in pharmaceutical and nutraceutical applications. Then they produce lipids. They produce these, I was mentioning these polyunsaturated fatty acids that are good for human and animal health. So these, especially interesting are these good fatty acids omega-3, so alpha-linolenic acid, eicosapentaenoic acid, and docosahexaenoic acid. But they also made these saturated lipids that are then can be used for making biofuels. Then they can make proteins that are, of course, can be used as human and animal nutrition. Polysaccharides, like sugar, carbon-based compounds, equally good for nutrition. And then they make bioactive compounds that can be used for making, for example, antibiotics. And then they produce biopolyesters that can be used for making plastics. And then I'm going to set the mode. Yes. So some algae are also capable of making hydrogen that can be then used as an energy source. So depending on the, well, the microalgal species and the growth conditions, then different varieties of microalgae can make very different products. And these production conditions can be used to direct production to the direction what is wanted. Do we want to make pigments, or do we want to make biofuel or biohydrogen, for example? And yeah, it's just areas of application. So if we think about the microalgae market globally, then it's actually quite huge. So here's an example of a market evaluation by one company. And the current market size value of microalgae is 1,000 million, so $1 billion. And the growth rate is forecasted to be 5% per year. So in 10 years, the market value would reach $1,600 million. And globally, there are several very big manufacturers of different kinds of algae products on global markets. And the most common species that are used in production are these Dunaliella. It's a marine species cultured in marine water, seawater. Then spirulina, which is a blue-green algae bacteria. And then chlorella is a green algae. But then there are also some other algae species that are interesting, for example, Haematococcus pluvialis. I will be talking about chlorella and Haematococcus studies that we have made here. And then these algae can be grown indoors in photobioreactors, and they can be cultured in like special growth media. So they use inorganic nutrients for growth. Or then the algae can be cultured in outdoors in algal ponds in like in southern areas where they get lots of sunlight naturally. But of course, here in northern Finland or northern areas, the availability of sunlight is quite scarce. So these photobioreactors need artificial lighting via LED lights. And then this course was about circular economy. So one aspect of a circular economy is to use different kinds of wastewaters to culture the microalgae. So, of course, replacing products that are made from fossil fuel with microalgal products is also circular economy. But we can increase the sustainability of this algae culturing by using wastewaters for as a culture medium. And the like two holes, the algae can be used for bioremediation of this wastewater. So the wastewater can be cleaned by using microalgae. But at the same time, the microalgae are producing this valuable biomass and these biomolecules that I showed in the previous slides. And different kinds of wastewaters have been used for growing algae. So wastewater or sludge from different kinds of industries, for example, food production. So all kinds of waste that come from food production and then clean the food production tanks, for example, like dairy products. Then wastewaters from breweries or distilleries or from greenhouses. Then from agriculture, farming or aquaculture, or from textile production and textile dyeing, and then also municipal and industrial wastewaters. So basically anything that contains enough nutrients, nitrogen and phosphorus for growing of the algae. But then these nutrient concentrations and the nutrient ratios in the wastewater, they vary hugely between these different kinds of wastewaters. And that can affect the growth of the biomass and also what kind of substances or biomolecules this biomass is producing. And then also they may contain some contaminants if we think of municipal wastewater or industrial wastewater. There can be heavy metals or some chemical or pharmaceutical contaminants or even pathogens. And this is why the source of wastewater can affect the future, further use of the algal biomass. And here in our department, we have concentrated in testing the use of aquaculture effluents for culturing algae. So traditionally, fish have been farmed in Finland in this kind of flow-through fish farms. So these fish farms are situated along a river, and then the water from the river is directed through these fish ponds and then back to the river. So then all the nutrients are very diluted and they are released to nature. But then in recent years, maybe a couple of decades, this kind of recirculation aquaculture systems, which is like short, RAS is short for that, have become more popular, and people are interested in culturing fish in these kind of systems. So these are like land-based systems, so they are not situated in aquatic environment, and they have a closed water circulation. So fish are put in the tanks, and then they are fed with fish feed. And then the water is circulated so that the first solid wastes are removed from this water. So the fish excreta and fish remaining fish feed. And most of the phosphorus is then removed with this solid waste. Then the fish are also breathing or excreting carbon dioxide. So that is removed in a process called stripping. And then there is a biofilter. Now I lost the here. So biofilter is a tank that is containing bacteria that are capable of making ammonia into nitrate. So ammonia is toxic for fish if it accumulates enough in the water, and it's released from the metabolism of the fish. But nitrate is less toxic. So these RAS systems use this biofilter for solving this problem with ammonia. And then The water cannot be, however, circulated like forever, but some fresh water has to be added into the system so that there is not too much accumulation of toxic substances in the water. So usually 5 to 10% of the water intake and discharge is applied. And now this discharge water contains concentrated nutrients. And this has enough nutrients so that it can support growth of microalgae. And then in this RAS system, carbon dioxide accumulation is also like replaced with oxygen input into the system before it, water goes back to fish. And ozone can be used for UV light or disinfection. So in our project, so we have been using this concentrated discharge water or effluent, and then also we tested using this carbon dioxide that is released from the system for enhancing algal growth. So this microalgae project started in 2017 when my colleague Juhani Pirkonen, who is also a lecturer, senior lecturer at our department and studying aquaculture things, he got an idea to study culturing microalgae in relation to these RAS systems in Finland that are producing like salmonid fish. And we got this first fund from European Maritime and Fisheries Fund. And we had the PhD student working on the systems. So the new thing here was applying this like Nordic conditions. So salmonid production and the temperatures are much lower than in, like, for example, in southern Europe or Asia. So we were testing the growth of the algae at 70 degrees. So in the ambient conditions of these fish farms where this RAS wastewater is produced. And our first task was to test different strains of and species of algae that we selected these from algae banks, but these are species and strains that have been isolated in northern conditions, so they should be able to grow in cold, also in cold water. And then we tested nutrient removal and growth of several algae and noticed that this removal efficiency differed between species. So here you see blue bar is phosphate removal and orange is nitrate removal. And you can see that phosphorus is used first. So these algae are probably, they could benefit for phosphorus addition in this RAS wastewater. Then we had a master student, Marco Calderini, who was interested to study fatty acid composition of this algae and if the filtration or removing all the particles and bacteria from the water would affect this biomass composition of certain algae. And this filtering didn't affect too much this composition. So you can see that in raw unfiltered water and filtered water, the different proportions of these unsaturated fatty acids are pretty much the same. So there are three different algal species studied here. And these have been published in these papers that you can see here. Then one problem about algal production is then how to remove the or collect the algae from the water. And actually mechanical removal is one of the most expensive parts of this algal culturing. So in this aquaculture project, we thought that maybe we could remove this algae with the use of filter feeding animals that might then be used further as a feed for this fish or some other animals. So we tested two types. So this
is a water flea. So these are tiny crustaceans that are in that occur in lakes. And if you're interested in Daphnia water fleas, come to the researchers' night on Friday because we will have a water flea chamber there. So then you can see what they look like. But anyway, they are taking their nutrition from water so that they are filtering with their antenna this water and feeding the algae. And then another organism that we tested are mussels, these are lake mussels. And they are also filtering the water and taking then the microalgae as nutrition. And we tested if these water fleas could remove algae. And you see that this removal efficiency differs between different algal species. And then if we see, if we check if the nutrients are then released back to the water, because then the water fleas are feeding on the algae and taking up the nutrients that the algae has taken up from the water, but they are also releasing some nutrients through their metabolism back to the water. And we saw that for one algae, these they didn't release nutrients back to the water, but then one algae was releasing phosphorus back when they were fed to water fleas. So when we want to apply these kind of systems, then it matters what species we are using there. And then we also tested three different kinds of mussels. So there was a graduate student, Ville Julkunen, who was doing this research, and he actually then got interested in mussel culturing. So now he's doing a PhD about using mussels in as biofilters of substances from water. So they were removing these algae. So this white bar here is a control without mussels, and these are three different mussel types, and the in y-axis there's this removal of algae. So then now we have this kind of funding from Academy of Finland. So it's next level process integration in microalgae biotechnology with digital applications. And this consortium led by Dr. Paul Masalmi, who is working at the Faculty of Information Technology. Her background is in aquatic sciences and studying like natural phytoplankton, but she has recently started studying like spectral imaging systems. That is why she's working at Faculty of Information Technology. So she's leading this consortium, and then there's also VTT participating, and then our group. And Pauliina's group and then the VTT are developing different kinds of spectral imaging systems that could be used then in like online monitoring of these algae culture systems. So they would improve the like the efficiency of the culturing, so they would know like during the culturing if there are problems that should be taken care of. Normally we have to take like samples and look at the microscope what is happening there, but with the spectral imaging systems we could probably follow the culturing process online. And in our group, there's this Dr. Juhani Pirhonen is also involved in as an expert in aquaculture. Then we had a postdoc Minna Hiltunen, but she recently got her own academic research fellowship starting this September. So now we have a new postdoc Jussi Vesamäki and a PhD student Hemantta Timilsiina. And you see here this Marco Calderini, who was doing his master's thesis in Aubergine in the first place. So he has then made a PhD with Sami Taipale, who is going to be here talking to you next. And then now he's working as a postdoc in Pauliini's project. And then there's a PhD student, Sally Pääkkönen. And in VTT group, there's a couple of researchers and also PhD student working on modeling carbon dioxide capture. And this our project is called MIDAS, so it's short for microalgae digital applications. And if you are interested, you can look at our web pages at the university site with those links. So now I'm telling you about the our results. So I think I've used my time already.
We have until
Yes.
11 o'clock,
Okay,
so
yes.
if
Okay, I will be fast. So the goal is to study the use of effluent from the SRAS systems for microalgae cultivation and use of carbon dioxide emissions from this system, and then to test how this affects the different biomolecules in the microalgae. So this is the SRAS system where there are fish in the tanks, and then there's this biofilter where which is turning ammonium into nitrate, and then we take wastewater and carbon dioxide from the system for using the culturing the algae. And here we did a preliminary test with two different macroalgae, and we showed that this carbon dioxide that we take from the RAS, it slightly enhances the growth of these two algae. And if you are interested, you can read the results from this publication. And currently we have been working with the Chlorella vulgaris. It's a green algae that is one of the most cultivated green algae worldwide. It has high protein content, but is also capable of producing high amounts of lipids, and it's a very fast grower. And also, and that's why it's used also for carbon dioxide capture. And it's a model species in this MIDAS VTT, a part of this project. And so we studied how these growth conditions and nutrient ratios in the wastewater and light affect the biomass composition of chlorella. And now I, yes, there's, this was led by Minna, and then Hemanta was working also in here. And we had three master students in this project in different parts of the or posing different questions. So we were culturing this chlorella in RAS effluent and compared its growth in growth media. And in this experiment, we saw that it had higher growth in its RAS effluent, but that was mostly because the RAS effluent contained more nutrients than the this growth artificial growth medium and MPC. And then we didn't see any effect of this carbon dioxide addition on this growth biomass or nutrient removal efficiency. But then we started, and this is also the biochemical composition. So carbon, lipid, and this monounsaturated fatty acids that are good for biofuels, their production was lower in RAS effluent, and their nitrogen content was higher. But again, this is because this artificial growth medium, there was nutrient limitation in that, I guess. And then again, we didn't see much effect of carbon dioxide addition on this biomass composition. And then we started thinking that maybe this algae was limited by something else than carbon dioxide. And then we tested if adding light into the system could affect the system. So we did an experiment where cultures with
that had one light and two lights, so there's a difference in light intensity. And carbon dioxide addition differed. And when there was more light, this carbon dioxide addition had more effect. And then one of the master students was studying if the nutrient limitation could be used for inducing more lipid production in this algae. So we tested nitrogen limitation and then sulfur limitation. So here you see the lipid percentage control, and we saw that this nitrogen limitation didn't have any effect on lipid production. On the contrary, decreased it. But then sulfur limitation increases the lipid production slightly, but not significantly. So chlorella can produce up to 30% lipids of its dry weight. And here we see that we are below 20. Then another algae that we have been studying is Haematococcus pluvialis. This algae is important because it can produce astaxanthin, which is a powerful antioxidant. And this algae is growing first as green cells and multiplying when it has good conditions and lots of nutrients. But then when it gets threshed, it starts to produce this astaxanthin as a protective measure against nutrient limitation or too much light or other stress factors like salt. And in aquaculture, this is important because this synthetic astaxanthin is added in salmon feed to make the red flesh, the cultured fish. And globally, this astaxanthin market is also very valuable. So it was a projected market value by 2030 is 250 million. But then now there's increasing interest in the use of naturally produced astaxanthin, because this what is added to salmon feed is synthetic and it's made from like petrochemical products. And this Haematococcus pluvialis is one of the best natural sources of this astaxanthin. It can produce up to 7% of its dry weight, this astaxanthin. But it grows very slowly and it's susceptible to contamination. So the main challenge is high volumes production. And we have been testing different methods to increase the production of this biomass in rust wastewater. And we compared different kinds of culture systems. So in batch cultures, so where the growth media is put there on once and the algae is put once and they deplete the nutrients and then the algae is harvested. So then the algae, this pluvialis, is depleting nutrients and then it's turning red very early, so it's not continuing the biomass production. So we tested a continuous flow-through system and then semi-continuous flow-through systems. So we were replacing the nutrients so that they got nutrients all the time, and then collecting the overflow for this astaxanthin production. And we saw in the first experiment, there was comparison of untreated rust wastewater and then growth medium. And we saw that this Haematococcus was capable of growing in this rust wastewater for an extended period of time, so 30 days. But it probably suffered from the bacteria in the wastewater because there was gradual biofilm formation in this system. And then we saw also microbial degradation of this cells when we were trying to induce astaxanthin production. So in another experiment, we tested Ohemata species to test this how if filtration or filtration autoclaving would help the situation. And it looks like that autoclaving is a good method to remove the bacteria. And then we could induce astaxanthin production in this algae cultured in this fresh wastewater. So after the algae had been collected from this system, they were then induced to highlight. Also, we were trying to induce astaxanthin production with the highlight, and there was some increase in time, so after 2 weeks. But optimizing these stress conditions is probably more important that we are then trying to next to maximize the yield. And currently, we are testing polyculture experiments because we saw that this Haematococcus was suffering from this bacterial growth in our effluent, so we are testing if a co-culture of algae that are capable of ingesting the bacteria could help us growing Haematococcus, and then we could produce biomass with both astaxanthin and then maybe some of these essence of fatty acids present in these other algae. But here you see that when you're working with biological systems, you can always come up with different kinds of complications. So now we had this kind of ciliates in the cultures, and the first trial didn't work out because there were the ciliates were eating our algae. So why would we bother using rust effluent and carbon dioxide from this rust system in algae culture? So one aspect is that we can then take the nutrients from the wastewater, so they are we can reduce eutrophication of natural waters if the waters are, nutrients aren't released back to nature. And then if we think about nitrogen and phosphorus production for fertilizers globally. So nitrogen fertilizers are manufactured with this Haber-Bosch method, and it consumes fossil fuels and produces carbon dioxide, which is like 1% of human emissions actually. And phosphorus is a mining mineral, and the reserves of this phosphorus will eventually exhaust. Then by taking up the carbon dioxide, right, we can increase the carbon neutrality of the macroalgae cultivation and also the neutrality of aquaculture. And then aquaculture wastewater, as compared to industrial or municipal wastewaters, has less contaminants, for example, heavy metals or pathogens. But then these problems are that this rust wastewater might be too dilute for commercial biomass production as compared to these other types of wastewaters. So one option is then there to target for these high-value products like astaxanthin production. And then combining these algae cultures to actual fish farming facilities still needs a solution to some technical problems. And here's an example of algae biotechnology technology company in Finland. So Turku University has a long history in studying macroalgae culturing, and they have currently started a pilot production facility in Turku. It's first it's connected to a greenhouse, and they were using greenhouse wastewater. And now there's a new project where Valio is also involved, and they are using I think washing waters of this milk product facilities for as a growth media for algae. So this is a growing technology, but there are still some like technical solutions that need to be solved before it is like commercially feasible here in Norden for this. And thanks for your interest, and sorry for being too wordy. I had only 25 slides, so I thought that it's good for half an hour.
Thank you, Nadia. So now for questions for Katja. It's really interesting talk because I've been working with you several years on the analysis of this algae and waters, and roughly knew what you were talking about, but I didn't know exactly that what you have been doing. So it's really interesting. I was wondering about the, because you told about the flow through aquaculture and this recirculating aquaculture. What is the benefit of using this recirculating aquaculture?
Well, for one thing, the production can go on year round because it's like land-based system where conditions are like stable, and then they are not releasing these nutrients back to the nature. But I think in production-wise, it's the stable conditions, which is the main interest in fish farming.
Yeah.
And then, of course, nowadays, getting new licenses for new aquaculture facilities is more difficult because you have to take into account like water protection things.
Yeah, that's true. How about would the process look like? Because you were talking about batch process, then continuous process, then maybe semi-continuous, you've been doing trials, but it's pretty straightforward when you do it with algae. So you can do batch and then remove the algae, or then continuous and remove part of the algae. But if you have the water fleas or the mussels, how would you do the process in that case?
Well, I guess then they would be like in separate containers so that then the algae is fed to this filter feeder. So either you take them from the batch culture or then you collect them from continuous or semi-continuous cultures and then feed them to these filter feeders. But I guess you would build sort of like systems where the algae would be, the overflow from algae in continuous cultures would be going through the filter feeders.
Yeah. What would you do with the filter feeders? Can you eat them?
Well, Daphnia can be fed to fish directly.
Yeah.
So they are very popular fish nutrition in the lakes. So
Yeah, so circular economy aspect there.
that's called integrated multitrophic aquaculture. So you have like this fish are producing waste and then algae are taking up the nutrients and then the water fish would be eating algae and then fish would be eating the water
So
fish. So that would be
loop. Yeah.
circular economy.
That's great.
Yeah. And well, mussels, they would be actually we could eat the mussels ourselves, or then they would be fed to like chicken, for example, because the mussel shells contain calcium.
So
So
you
they
can
would
feed the shells also. Yeah, then I was wondering, have you thought about, because you said about the industrial wastewaters and those maybe municipal wastewaters, they are not clean enough for your process. But if you do some kind of pre-treatment, would you be able to, if you remove the heavy metals, would you be able to do industrial wastewaters also?
Yeah, I think so. And there's lots of research going on with industrial and municipal investors as well. So,
Yeah.
yeah. So now you have these new systems how to take up the metals from the
Yeah, I was thinking
water.
of our collaboration projects
Yeah.
because yeah, we have studies in the same field, so maybe we can work something out. I will see if there's any questions in the chat. Yeah, go ahead.
And what would be the average in growth rate of a high growing microalgae like to the for example?
Actually, I don't know because chlorella is also capable in growing in very high temperatures. And if we think about algae cultures in like certain
Yeah, like I
regions,
would like
then the
for.
biomass production would be much higher. So in our system, the problem is that there might be not enough nutrients and the temperature is low. So then we are trying to adapt this system for it to be used in connection with this like aquatic aquaculture system. So we're not going to get it, as high production of biomass as in some other.
So in optimal conditions, how would be the growth rate more or less? Is it known or
It's known, but now I Don't remember by heart.
Also, how converting the microalga to biofuel, the process to convert it is, could you explain in a simple way so I can understand it, or it's like a really complex process?
Well, I guess there are different kinds of methods to extract the different kind of bio products from the algae. I think you need some kind of what is labeled in English?
Solvent.
Solvents or then some critical carbon dioxide, so like fluid carbon dioxide for extracting the wanted biochemical from the algae. And those are also like expensive methods. So, in order to develop these macroalgae cultures to be able to compete with fossil fuels, all these processes have to be streamlined and the costs need to be decreased before this is like currently like able to compete with fossil fuels, but maybe in future, and now that we want to decrease the use of fossil fuels, then this might come like viable options in the future.
Thank you. Perfect. Thank you.
Yes, there's a few questions in the chat. So, after using the algae to clean the wastewater, what are the common contaminants left? Or could you just put it into the river straight away, or is it clean enough?
Well, algae are also good in taking up these also contaminants like heavy metals. So I think they're very good in cleaning the wastewater. And then you probably could just release the waters back to nature. But then the problem is that if there is lots of contaminants in this wastewater, then they might be then aggregated into the microalgae. And then that affects how you can use them, the algae, for making different products.
Yeah, and that probably also affects how to use the mussels. If the algae take up the heavy metals, they are taken up to the mussels, so you couldn't eat them as human food at least, because that was the continuation question actually. Then Junil was also asking, did you try to combine different species for the removal studies?
Do you mean different species of algae, or
Yeah, I presume.
we did only monocultures in these experiments, so that one algae type at a time
But you had
with
different
different,
algae, yeah.
we had three and or two different algae in different experiments.
Yeah. Then about question in biomass production, how do you harvest the algae? So you mentioned the like mechanical harvesting.
It can be used. We
Yeah, but
haven't
it's
actually,
expensive.
so you can centrifuge them or then settle or flocculate or and
Then about can you use this method to remove microalgae from other contaminants in the wastewater treatment application of
well, the
microalgae?
goal of culturing microalgae is that there wouldn't be any other organisms at least. But then if you are just settling down the biomass, then I think also if there are contaminants, they will be included in the biomass. So a good option would be to use wastewaters that are clean of the contaminants.
Yeah.
But bacteria aren't necessarily contaminants because they just add up into the biomass and
Yeah.
depending on how much there is and what bacteria they are, they actually there's lots of research done in doing combination with algae and microbes in cleaning the wastewaters because they would be targeting different parts of the wastewater. But separating them would be difficult, I think.
Yeah, that's true, perhaps.
Junie, thanks you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the questions. We will thank Katja again, and then we will move on to Sami's presentation. So I will upload it. Where is my mouse? I've lost my mouse. Kiitos. Lost my mouse for a moment, but it returned to being. Okay, then I probably can share it from the,
Yes,
yeah.
the best.
I will just. Now it's showing what's going on. I
Se pitää
will.
pysäyttää sen suunnistaa ensiksi.
Mä sulen nää.
No niin.
Sulen nää Katja ikkunat. Ai, mä menisin sulkemaan. Sulinko mä nyt sen sun esitykset. Joo, tietenkin.
Okay, so welcome Sami Taipale, working as a professor at the Environmental Science Department, and he will be telling about his group's work. Thank you.
I see. So you can raise your hand when you want to start. I have many kind of topics, so I work in very wide different kind of topics. And I have also the mass topics for you if you are interested. So here you can see also the Hemakokkus. So I've been working also with the algae. And there was the question like how much biomass you produce. If algae produce 0.4 grams biomass in liter, then it's good. In matter.
Per day or how long do they take to
Yeah.
produce that?
That's good. So it's usually called then the daily cane. So yeah, if they can produce that amount in day, then it seems to be good. And that's the main hindrance in the biodiesels and all kind of applications are that algae grows too slow. Yeah. So I'm a associate professor working in analytical environmental chemistry. Here you can see some. I have a publication on different kind of journals from ecology, from environmental science, and establishing also like a methods. And recently, I have been in plastic circular economy, nutritional ecology, and now we are trying to produce food using the algae. This is the because I'm working with the environmental analytical chemistry, so all projects are related in analytical methods. Here you can see the laboratory analysis. This is for compound-specific isotopes, so it just gives you the understanding like that there is different kind of methods. So food production is the one most challenging issue what we have. Increase in number, and then that the food need to be produced in a sustainable way. And there's two components which are essential fatty acids, but they are long chain essential fatty acids, which does not produce by plants. So if you have a plant oil, you don't have these fatty acids. But if you eat fish, then you can have all from the seafood. And
essential your brain function, essential your cardiovascular diseases. This is actually main reason for mortality for people. So therefore, it's important, and therefore there is trying to have a solutions. And because of the nature eutrophication, there is less and less in nature having these two long-chain essential fatty acids. And we have been studying in my project, like in Africa, where practically fish is most important or very important source of proteins and essential fatty acids. We have been studying, or we are currently studying there, what's happening there. And the climate change and temperature increase has the most severe consequences in these regions. So they have a problem how to have food enough. And the one solution there is that is in the aquaculture, but he was showing something in the RAS. And I want to mention now that when you have this recirculation economy project or you want to use side streams of something, the hindrance always is the legislation. So that's the thing. So usually if something is waste, you can't use it for food production. And the legislation hindrance what you can do the food. And that's we are working with the Turku University, and they are specialized in food production and also the fatty acids and finish. And we tested with them using Dan flagellate as a food source to produce DHA and EPA. But then you can't have any side streams. You can have only side streams which are already verified to food production. Like if it's the Valio or their own side products, you can't have any RAS water. No, that's the forbidden. So therefore, the cost can be quite high. And there is one company in Canada who use this like commercially efficiently. And I have actually one project rating decision from Academy of Finland if we continue this work. So we have found one freshwater alternative to produce these two long-chain fatty acids. Then we can go to the plastics. Do you have anything, any question relating to the algae or food production? Yes, please.
I don't know how to ask it. Will any be, for example, if I were to cultivate algae for food production,
Yes.
macroalgae,
Yes.
wouldn't be faster growing than microalgae, or am I wrong? Because you told me
Yes.
the growth rate per day of the
Yes.
microalgae, and I think I have read in other sites that the macroalgae have faster
Yeah.
growing rate than.
Yeah. Then we go the very good questions. And all the what we have in the markets now, if you go to markets and see any supplements, they are always green algae or cyanobacteria. They don't produce EPA or DHA. There is the macroalgae, which are like the diatoms. They can only produce small amount of EPA, but not DHA at all. So these fatty acids are species specific. And thus, we can use generally macroalgae to produce omega-3s, but not for these two specific fatty acids.
Okay, so for that specific fatty acids, it's necessary to cultivate the microalgae.
Yes.
But for example, if I was only thinking about producing food, microalgae could be another option.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And they are doing that. And And the food legislation. So first, then you have a product, you can extract the lipids, then you need to do all kind of ecotoxin testings, which lots of money. And then European Union finally says these microalgae can be used for food production. So it's very long process total.
Okay, and for example, if I were to cultivate a microalgae in a multicultive, for example, like recirculating the water of other fish, it would be difficult for the European Union
Yeah.
to allow it because
Yes.
it's like it would they would be using the nutrients produced by the
Yeah.
fish waste.
Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah. That's how it is. Then we go to the plastic, which is the one, maybe the main team what I have been doing. So we have an analytical lab where we can identify how much there is the plastics. And many size streams, they have lots of plastics. So the food which is not eaten from grocery stores, it goes to the composting, to the industrial way, and there is all plastic there. And if you want to do that compost something, then you need to know how much there's the plastics. So these slides were just the developed methods. We can skip these and I go back there. So I've been, at least there's the four project in the plastic circular economy. And they are side streams of the food industry. So I said to you the food, what comes to grocery store. Then sewage. So when it's composted, and then it's the put into an aerobic process, and then you have finally the sludge. And then you need there's the nutrients, and then you need to decide what you do with that. And there's the food as from the factories who burn the food. There's the places like Lahti, Kuusamo, so they usually can be small companies who has these side streams, and they don't they want they need to now pay cost like Kuusamo. They take the sludge to the Oulu, which burn them, and it costs them money. And that's the one example I have for you here. So I have been 2 years in Kuusamo Evo to have them solution what they do with the sewage sludge and ash. And our task was the hygienization, how much there's plastics and nutrients. So we have first, we have the lab experiments, and then we have pilot experiments. And now we are going to, or they are applying how you call exceptional permission to use this fertilizer to forest because it's currently forbidden by the law. So we use ash there to increase the pH above 10, which kills all harmful bacteria, so pathogenic. So this is how does it look like. So it's combination of the sludge and ash. You can see the wet weight and dry matter up there. And that's how does it look like. So first part, if the effect of ash, so pH of sludge is low, 5.9. And there is actually Salmonella, Escherichia coli, different kind of pathogens. And we add ash there, and then you can see increase of temperature. And I mentioned that critical is 10. So already little addition of the ash increase the pH enough that there is not any harmful bacteria. And all goes by the law. So if you start working in this business, then you always need to know what are the key laws. And here is the states how much you can have these bacteria pathogenic. And you can go actually here. So here's the Salmonella. So slug itself has a Salmonella. This is after 24 hours and after 48 hours. And here is the Escherichia coli. You can see it's in the slot, but after you extra ask, we have removed this problem. And here's the practical picture of you. These are Escherichia coli. This is the salmonella. This sample is the sludge. And then all other plates, there's nothing. So this shows that we are effective in removing harmful bacteria in this way. And you need this information when you apply permission to use this as a forest fertilizer. And aesthetically, there was no mold, so it was okay. That's how does it look like it as a product. And plastic, there was no plastic practically in the Finnish modern wastewater treatments. They have a sieves and they physically remove big plastic particles. There has been studied that like 90% or above, they are removing all kind of plastics there. So plastics, so there's the law for this that you can have, was it nowadays? It was previously, I think it was 0.5% in wet weight that you can have a plastic, metal and glass in your forest fertilizer. And then you need to take account that you have enough the nutrients there. And so there's different kind of parameters what you are optimizing there. And then you finally, you choose the product 8 to have there. Okay. Do you have any other questions relating on this? Yes, here.
How about the heavy metals in the
ash? Yes, we actually sent to Eurofins and they are looking at hormones, organic pollutants, and heavy metals. And expensive analytics, it's €2,000 for one sample. So, and have somebody been talking about plasma here?
Martin told about our project in the chemistry, but not...
Yes, but I don't need to then explain general things. You already know the PlusLife project, so I can go to what we are doing. So we are doing... So to solve the problem, we want to have novel materials which are not so harmful. And I don't know if you knew, but if you have a biodegradable plastic, they still may add same chemicals there as a normal conventional plastic. Did you know that? So the chemicals makes the harmful, the plastic, not the plastic itself. So there is also trying to have a solution which give the features why you add the chemicals. For example, you can add the phthalates to have that the plastic is more, how you say, not so, to give better shape. So when you have a plastic in food, you're wrapping them, you want to have some kind of features that it's working good. So it's tough enough. So that's the thing. There's different kind of definitions, like compostable and biodegradable plastics differ. And if you have industrial compostable plastics, they decompose in 70 Celsius, like PLA. So if you throw it away to the nature, it's not disappearing to anything. The definition is to in nature in decompose in 2 years. And ocean degradable plastics in 2 years are faster than cellulose. And they don't necessarily degrade in aquatic environment. And that's what we are studying. And we are also studying some novel materials. And here we go. I mentioned earlier you that the law, legislation is important. And then when you do measurements, the degradation tested, it's go by the standards. You need to know American standard, European Union standard, how do you measure something correctly? In university, we can have like a own fancy systems to measure, but if it goes to the decision makers, they need to be that we have followed some standards. Like this is what we have been developing. So you can measure mineralization. Basically, you have a material and you can measure the carbon dioxide there. Then you can calculate how much microbials have been mineralized the carbon to inorganic carbon. Or then the mass change. You put in 6 months something, here is the like film of the plastic detonates the water, soil, and then after 6 months you can measure it again. And then the difference tells you how fast it has been decomposed. And then there's the method what I have been developing here. It's the compound specific stable isotopes. So we can have a 13 labeled material, and then microbes respirate the 13 enriched carbon dioxide. We know that they have been utilizing the plastic or any studied material, and then we can see from the biomass. And then these together, we can calculate exactly the years. Like we found out that maybe it was 10,000 years, so it's not decomposing polyethylene. Humid lake water, 200 years, and clear water lake, it was 200 years. But this doesn't take account UV radiation, which can half of the time. Okay, there's this PhD student, Nora Risku, working on biodegradation. There's the first part done. What happens, biodegradability of compostable plastics in waters. Now we are testing ultraviolet radiation, and then we add structural cellulose to the plastics, which does not include any harmful chemicals, but gives the good structure to the plastic. And it can speed up the process. Here you can see that some results. Here's the 2 years. You can see that some materials are below and some materials are above. And what you can see that the lake water and Baltic Sea, they can behave differently, which makes things very complex. So it matters if it's the ocean, brackish water, and what type of lake water. So generalization is very challenging. And now we are testing ultraviolet radiation. What happens with that? Does it speed up the decomposition? And these are actually novel materials we have been testing. They have been 3 months in soil. And actually, in this project, there's the master topics. And these are actually combination, and some of them are secrets, but we don't know what they are. And they can be used in different kind of industries that they decompose in nature. So actually, I can say the one problem is that, you know, the drones, what they use nowadays in the wars, and when they go to the forest, there's lots of plastic debris. And what they want to have that the drone is made of the biodegradable plastics. So when it drops to the forest or somewhere, it's decomposed with the time. Okay. So all what you do, you need to always test the ecotoxicity. The one is important questions that are the microplastic dangerous. I can briefly tell you how it's done. So usually we compare plastics to natural polymers. There's like a sediment, peat, or kaolin. And you can see that even the dose increases, you don't see any toxicity. But for polypropylene here, This is the immobilization EC50 is 200 milligrams a liter. It's quite high, very, very high dose. It comes. But you need to also know that when you put something to context, that nutrient quality of food to like the water flea, Daphnia magna, model testing organisms, is greater than impact on microplastic or temperature. So when you have a cyanobacteria in your food, it's bigger problem to the water fleas than microplastic or increase of temperature. And this is the same thing. Okay, so this I want to tell you, this is the other PhD student, Mary Mäkelä. She started in Plus Life working with ecotoxicity. And since the amounts of plastics are not necessarily very high in nature, so phenotype effects are really detected or determined. But we are looking that what about the lower concentration? Can it affect the DNA level, gene expression? Can it influence some protein synthesis, or can it influence generally the metabolomics? And this metabolomics, we do collaboration with Elina Kalenius chemistry department. So that's what we are doing for European Union, telling that we see the harmful effects in lower concentration, which could be used in future. And future material, you want that it decomposed fast, right? But when you have a material which decomposed fast, it can have a harmful metabolites. Usually inactive, like a polyethylene, they are rarely like a toxic effects. But here is the example, one PHP, HV, decomposed fast in 2 years, but have already quite low concentration toxic effect noted in gene expression and gene regulation. And this is the group working on this. And then there has been the master students. Okay, do we have time for questions?
Yes, yes. Thank you, Lauri. Interesting presentation. It's nice that you brought up the legislation part, because I've also been involved in like struggling with it when we have some kind of project we want to move on forward with. It's forbidden by the legislation.
Yes.
Combining organic and inorganic feeds and working with waste materials.
Yes.
There's a bit more work to do for the legislation to
allow
for the circular economy to move forward.
Yes.
Question from the audience. There were a few already. Now let's check the...
chat also. Nothing yet, but maybe someone's still typing. Nice that you and Katja were both working on the algae. So
yes.
Nice. It connects with the topics that we have actually covered here. And also the Plast Lab project.
Yes.
So both chemistry department and environmental sciences are involved in this Plast Lab project. And of course, we have lots of other partners also.
Yes.
In Finland. Yeah. If you have questions, you can write them in the chat. But otherwise, we will be finishing up for today. We will have the next session on Monday, right? Yes, for Manu Lahtinen. I think he will be the last presenter for this course. So probably next Wednesday we won't be having any sessions. So
what topic was he? He has lots of projects, but he's mostly involved with chemistry, so metal organic frameworks, how carbon capture and things like that. Similar to Matti's presentation, they are actually working on a few projects together, but similar kind of topic to Matti Haug.
Yeah. Doesn't seem to be any questions in this chat, so thank you, Sami. We can close today's session. And I will put the recording to Moodle maybe tomorrow. Thank you. Can I put your presentation and stuff in? Yeah, thank you. Okay, thank you.
Bye, thank you.
Bye.
So see you on Monday. Bye.
Bye, see you.
Oh, what do you want to do?